Sorry, traffic's going on pretty soon. Some guy starts to slow down. Is he going to slow down? For? There's an amber light over there or something. There's a lot of. We got a red, white, and blue one. Pass over it lightly.
357.
Got amendments for it?
357.
You got some amendments, you think?
No. Very simple. Very
yours. What? Amendments. Yeah. That's the only one
they
got here.
Bob, would you like to explain what 357
Chairman, members of the committee, director, my name is Robert Knight, managing director of the Oregon Trucking Association. I'm appearing here this morning in support of Senate Bill 357.
How's everything in Acapulco world?
And I would briefly like to explain the reason why we are asking for an additional foot overhang. And I will be limiting my testimony to the demands or the needs of one segment of the motor carrier industry, the auto transporters. They're the ones that are having the problem, although the bill would apply to any vehicle. I'm going to show you a picture. I'd like it back. Hopefully that the bill will go through and we can go on over to the House for that. I'd also like to advise you that this session, this year, the states of California, Colorado, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, Montana, and Washington, and Wyoming have approved this type of legislation. The reason is that because of the new federal standards on vehicles for the impact bumper, the length of a vehicle, in many cases, will be longer than they have been in the past. And for this reason, the auto transporters will not be able to carry as many vehicles. They can carry the same number as you could see on that picture if they're granted just 1 foot overhang. It'll have no effect whatsoever on traffic or safety or damage to the highway. If I may read a letter to you from Convoy Company, who transports a good deal of the automobiles in the Northwest, but the other carriers would have the same problem. And incidentally, I do have a confidential report from the Ford Motor Company explaining their new sizes on the new vehicles that will come out next fall.
No, he can't say it.
Confidential.
Senator Groener.
He said he had it, that's all.
You can have anything that I have.
Uh-oh.
Well, after the motion is made to move this one out, then.
We have attached a copy of the confidential 1973-74 Ford Comparative Vehicle Specifications, which indicates the increased length that we're facing primarily due to the federal standard for rear impact bumpers. Several of the sizes changes are a result of new styling concepts, such as the Mustang being reduced 18.8 inches, and the cougar size increasing 14.7 inches. Actually, these size increases will reduce our load factor since we will not be able to stay within the present 75 feet. But our request for the additional foot front overhang is occasioned by the need to back vehicles over the cab in order to get the best possible legal balance insofar as axle weights are concerned. If we're required to stay at the 3 feet presently in effect, the added length would reduce the front axle weight, where we frankly have very little problem, and add to our drive tandem weights, where we run very close to the federal freeze. Unfortunately, over the last few years, the rear vehicle overhang on pickups and car lines have increased for all manufacturers, so the federal impact bumpers have further complicated this problem.
1 foot, Bob?
1 foot. The only change in the present law is on page 3, line 26. Actually, Senator Groner, you have a very good point. This is the anti-inflation bill.
It's for the little people. It's for the little people, Dan. For the little people.
Mr. Groner, you're always going to make points. Matt, do you have a motion on the
bill? I will move it out.
Well, I think we ought to have a debate on that. Well, I lost it with you yesterday. I won't.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Yeah, one of yours. I want you on my side next time.
First caller.
Aye.
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 Aye. No, I will entertain a motion. Okay. To table
Senate Bill 64. Where are we
table? What? Senate Bill?
What's the one on the TV?
Senate Bill 64. The one we just looked at.
Wait a minute.
Isn't it? Isn't that the one you just looked at?
Huh?
Is that the one we just looked at?
That's your bill. Yeah.
They don't want it.
Yeah.
Aye.
What?
Aye.
What did you do to your bill?
What did
you
say?
Well, that's a... gentleman called in after that, introduced the bill. Well, of course. And I don't know where anybody else is. You don't know whether I ever noticed anybody else. At the driveway, they have a little red detector.
Yeah.
And in Minnesota or Wisconsin, it's blue. He thought it was a real good idea. Whether it is or not, I don't know. Sam lives down where they have the most of, I think, on the Oregon coast. Somebody good sales and went along and told everybody on the coast that those reds were going to go alongside there.
Well, it's only a can of blue paint, they can have a blue one down there.
Well, you might be
free sure. Enterprise.
Don't sell blue paint
there.
If you want to talk about it later, what's fine.
Not really a high priority.
Let's move on to 24-50.
And that's not almost passed out.
How do you want to Ted, you want to lead off or you want?
Yes, sir, we would like to.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ted Hughes, representing the 3M company, and we have about a 8-minute movie that we'd like to show. Very light and airy, and you'll like it and enjoy it.
Is the camera to run this thing?
Yes, sir. I hope we have the sound, too.
Well, do you want? Maybe
we really need a movie?
You don't want to see it?
I don't know. I don't want to see it.
We haven't seen a movie since we may want
to. If the committee would like to pass
it. Why don't you just break into a song and dance and do away with the movie?
And a little of the movie.
Have you seen the 3M
I should have said we have about a 10-minute movie. Don't you like it?
Those would like to see it. After the laser down the hall.
All right, we.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you say it's a good one, that's good enough for me. Man, I'm not going
to. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in the lieu of the movie,
a whole handful of them once.
I know, but in with the chance that some of the senators might have forgotten it.
If they need one, they can get one on the way out.
I like the cover. You'll notice they're not reflectorized. They're not to be read at night. So.
Yeah.
Strictly.
Rather well done.
I'll take one. We brought some with the idea in mind that the senators may
have
left
them
in their office.
The last one, these lobbyists asked to get something for my kids. He never got it, and I'm afraid to ask him for anything else. So
Schwinn bicycles are hard to get.
Gentlemen, if we may indulge you for a moment and go through this, the manual very briefly. Page by page, I'm sure it will tell the story about what the reflectorized license plates are all about. You'll notice the manual is broken down into the problem. What's the most dangerous time to drive a car? Nighttime, despite the fact that only one-third of the driving is done at night, the darkness accounts for nearly two-thirds of the traffic fatalities. And, of course, in the manual, it points out the difference between the cost in day accidents and night accidents. $400 in the daytime and $700 at night.
And since that study was made, there has been a most recent study by the 1971 by the Insurance Institute on various crash tests. Front-end damage increased 30% in 1 year and rear-end damage 45% at the same time. So these cost figures are automatically a great deal higher than they were in 1968.
The next page has, of course, a quote by the American Optometric Association about the inability to see or the inability to be seen in evening. And I'm sure we all know that, and we don't need to go. Whereas some safety devices aim at reducing the severity of an accident, reflectorized license plates aim at preventing the accident in the first place. Reflectorized license plates would, in effect, give every motorist in the state a further insurance policy aimed at reducing nighttime accidents, the most dangerous time to drive. Our next section in the manual asks the question, why reflectorized license plates? One of the reasons we quote is that the law enforcement officials. I skipped way over there, excuse me. The first page is that 44 states in the United States believe that reflectorized safety plates do contribute to accident reduction. 44 out of the 50. It quotes below some findings about the reduction in traffic accidents and nighttime driving from Maine, Minnesota, and Iowa, states that have had reflectorized license plates for a goodly number of years.
There's been a great deal of research about before and after studies, and the point has been raised, well, what other things could have, you know, contributed to a reduction in accidents? And that's a valid question. Most before and after studies are looked at that way. You can't use solid data like you can in a crash barrier test. But the fact that over the past 10 or 15 years, there have been about 20 independent different pieces of research, and they all lead to the same conclusion, really, logic kind of demands that you do feel that reflectorized license plates have an effect in reducing rear end nighttime collisions.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question at this point? If most of your cars, your modern cars, the rear end is lit up like a Christmas tree now, how would a reflectorized license plate give any more use?
That's a good point, Senator. I think last year, California, which has a pretty heavy safety inspection program, found that the greatest
failure in automobile systems were the lighting, especially the rear end lighting system. Brake lights are off, tail lights are off. Or for parked cars, when you don't have your automobile running or your lights on, and this is a large area of accidents. About 22% of your total accidents are two-vehicle rear-end collisions, many of them with parked vehicles or vehicles with improper or defective tail lighting systems.
That's before you turn the lights on.
Right. Or a parked vehicle along the side of the road, or a vehicle that may be stalled on a road that doesn't have an operating battery or electrical system. So this is the type of accident that reflectorized plates have a tendency to lead to. It's not the cure-all, by any means, of traffic safety, but it does have a solid effect in reducing that type of accident, and that's a very heavy percentage of the total amount of the accident safety.
Next page is another reason, if we need reasons, law enforcement officials have heavily endorsed nationwide as well as in this state. Reflectorized license plate. Yes, sir, it's an old one that hasn't been brought up to date and worn, but it's in the back page, you'll see, in endorsement. The reason is that reflectorized license plates average 50% more legibility than painted plates. Reflectorized license plates can be read against oncoming headlights, and reflectorized plates on parked unlighted cars can be easily read from two lanes away. So you can see the law enforcement officer, when he goes about his nightly chores, it would be a great vehicle to have. And fully reflectorized plates have other advantages. The next page addresses itself to three of those. Every vehicle has license plates which get renewed periodically, so by putting reflectorized material on the plate, you ensure that every vehicle on the road, old and new, gets its extra measure of safety front and rear each time the owner gets his license plate. Because the reflective plate works independently of a car lighting system, this is what Jim Whitehead mentioned a moment ago, it is especially valuable in calling your attention to a parked or stalled car on the road without light. And even if the car is stalled at an angle to the road, the reflectorized plate will perform effectively. Its bright warning alerts you in time to avoid a rear-end collision. Point C, supposing you're driving down the highway some dark night, up ahead is an abandoned car only partly off the road, all its lights out. It's an accident waiting to happen since most taillight reflectors don't reflect at an angle. But if that car had a reflectorized rear plate, it would show up brightly at long range. You will have time to react, time to pass safely, and time to signal any car behind you. A point I think is valid and speaks to your point, Senator Groner, is that the reflectorized plates are practically indestructible. They can be bent, damaged, about in parking, and they still work. There's nothing to shatter or burn out. And in California and Oregon, point E is very valid. A reflective safety plate will not be affected by rain or water.
If you were to completely cover it, cake it, like you know, you could make it completely opaque, obviously it wouldn't work.
Our next page in the manual deals with the costs and benefits of adopting a reflectorized license plate. This bill, HB 2454, says, in effect, that whenever a resident in the state of Oregon receives a pair of metal license plates, I say metal to be distinguished from the tab that he gets each year, he will pay $1 for the reflectorized license plate. Now that means, of course, if he keeps his car for 5 years, it's 20 cents a year for the increased protection that reflectorized license plates bring. Only when he has issued a pair of metal license plates will he pay the additional dollar, not $1 a year. The benefits that we mentioned in the manual are, we have extensive material, if the committee would be interested in, showing how reflectorized license plates do reduce nighttime or visibility, when the visibility is rough, accidents, and the cost
economic benefits that are derived because of the reduction of the plate. And our last page is that people like them. Currently, 77.7% of all U.S. registered vehicles have reflectorized safety plates. And when California adopts or goes into their reflectorized program, which the legislature passed last year, that will be 87% of all vehicles in the United States will be with reflectorized license plates. The only thing that is that it has been endorsed extensively by 44 states and this many vehicles because of the statistics prove that they are, in fact, valid protection of human driving. The rest of it, there's some endorsements that we received from the International Association of Chiefs of Police, the National Sheriff's Association, the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators.
Is somebody going to testify from the department on the cost, the initial cost of the changeover?
Right. Yes, sir. I would think so. And the last one is resolution from the state of Oregon.
Any questions?
How many companies put this manufacturing site? There are currently six U.S. manufacturers, Senator, of reflective materials that would be able to do this job, and several foreign manufacturers. I think when this was first considered in Oregon back in the early 50s, the 3M company was the only manufacturer, but we are no longer by any means.
Any more
questions?
Thank
you. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Chairman, my name is Ed Searing, Director of Field Services, Motor Vehicle Division. I have a brief statement on House Bill 2454 and all these copies with the committee. Engrossed House Bill 2454 presents no particular problems to the Motor Vehicle Division except for the phasing in on the new style plate. As we read the bill, as amended, we would issue new style plates only upon new registrations and would not require a massive change for all vehicles in the first year of implementation. Because of the staggered system of registration, month by month, there is a substantial inventory of plates on hand at any given time, amounting to about $60,000 in cost. We feel that you would not want us to throw away this much value and that we should use up the stocks of present style plates before issuing reflectorized plates. For this reason, we request the amendment of this bill by adding a Section 4 as follows. Section 4 suggested the effective date of this act should be January 1st, 1975, but the division may begin the issuance of reflectorized plates at earlier dates as stocks of current design plates are exhausted. That concludes the information of my statement. I have copies here.
Any discussion on the amendment? If not, all in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
On the phone? Now we have, is that all? Any more questions?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
I'm looking at existing law, and page 2, line 18, end of line 18 and 19, well, particularly the end of 18. Page two.
What line?
Do we actually have the year on the license plate, or is it the tag?
It's on the tab.
Is that correct language?
Well, the initial one has a year on it.
Initially? No, I think
it's a good year.
Initial plate has I'm sure it has the year on it.
Yeah,
and then you buy your tab and put it. No, you don't use
no,
the blank plate now.
Was that way at one time, but now
the little square for it.
This is placed on it as a place to issue.
You're right.
And that has the year and the sticker number.
That's on the sticker?
On the sticker itself, that's right. Other than that, it's the configuration of the letters and the numbers and the word Oregon.
Well, Ed, this was discussed when we started putting those little tabs on.
Right.
I don't care.
I think it's going to cost the people this state a great deal of money. Therefore, I would move we table it.
I like that idea. 60,000.
That's a lot of money. You know.
Only 60,000.
Oh, yeah, that's what they say. But you know, 60,000 here, and I'm getting tired of 60,000 here and 70,000 there. And I discussed this with Senator Atiyah previously, and I think it's Senator Atiyah. Do you want to tell me what you told me the other day?
Not here, not public.
Why? Okay. What do you want to do with this? I mean, that's the word you looked at.
Well, I really don't, Mr. Chairman, except maybe and shall provide a place for the year, or you know, something like that. As long as we're dealing with this thing, you know, this is, I believe, incorrect according to Oregon law. That may not be, Chairman, as you indicated, but I'm not sure that the plate does not come with the tag on it, does it? The plate.
It's placed on it at the office. No, they don't. Well, when it's mailed out, it would not be.
No, they mailed out with a plate. The tag
does. They give you a little package.
And the plate comes, and then the tag comes, and you put it on. I really don't want to make a federal case out of it. The point is, as long as we have it here, and as I read this, it didn't read correctly. As you're looking it up, I'm wondering about, I see in here that motorbikes, motorcycles, and that kind of thing, why not use these reflective plates on those? That's a real good place to have reflectorized plates. And
they would be under the terms of this bill.
They would be?
All plates would be reflectorized.
That starts up on line 13. It's all plates are made.
No, it's all plates that are made. Well, here, let me look at this.
Over on page 3, they talk about that.
Why would we just delete it in the year for which the license is issued? Because we could either say a place for a tag on which the year for which the license is issued, or just delete it. Either, there's two ways to go at it. Which?
Well, I would suggest that you just put a period after "or" and then delete the rest of it.
We have to insert the word "and."
Oh, you're talking about page 2?
Page 2, line 18.
Is that right?
Well, you'd have to insert "and" between "vehicle" and the word "the."
Senator, when you get a pair of plates now, you get the same envelope with a plate on the sticker the year you get them.
Right, but it's not on the plate.
Before you can display the plate on your vehicle, you've got to adhere to the sticker.
I know that.
I
just don't, but that's not what this says.
I'm trying to find this section. There's a section in the law that provides.
Also, the cost a year in that little plate, similar to California, the way they do it. And that would solve your problem. And it would be easy for manufacturers to do that.
In what?
You bought the year. In other words, you've got the 60 plates you're using now are 67 base plates. What you would do is you box in either in a little corner a 67, you can validate them now with a 73 and just go on from there. So you wouldn't have to change the law or do anything like that. Just the Motor Vehicle Department, in the law, that's the way it states. They should have done that previously, and it would just be boxed a year for all the plates.
You know, like California's base plate at 60 degrees? Same thing. Does it show? And the sticker goes right over.
I don't think it makes much difference.
For what it's worth, we've got a set of new plates in order to use the side. The tag tab was there.
That's not always the case.
Senator, 41.265 in the registration law provides for the use of stickers. And in sub 2 that we were looking at, the number of identification plates should be made in such size, form, and arrangement, and of such material shall be determined by the division, and they shall contain the distinctive number and characters assigned to the vehicle, the word Oregon, and the year for which the license is issued. Sub 3, the division may designate number identification plates for any year as the proper means of identifying the vehicle for a subsequent year or years. These plates shall be validated by a sticker of such size, color, and design and displayed as the division shall direct. The sticker shall bear a distinctive number and the registration period for which it is issued. After this period, it shall be unlawful to further display it on the vehicle. So this covers the year, the period.
Yeah, I know that. Really, I don't want to make a federal case out of it. This is not according to law.
Yeah. We changed all the tags. This was, and I have discussed it at length, and there was no change. Maybe at that time, I think it was somebody from the Border Department. Oh, I know. How was your attorney, the young attorney?
Holland? Perlman?
Yeah.
Leonard Coleman.
I don't know. Why don't we just...
Oh, no, it's not that big a deal. It's just that I don't believe. You know, we get fussing around with the details. Come on.
One more man marked up. Mark? Cooley?
Cooley,
sir. Eugene?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Coolidge. I'm a grad student at the University of Oregon and a licensed plate collector and designer, and I'm interested in this bill because of things that I've heard from other people that have these plates. In Mississippi, Washington, Idaho, Sacramento. I can go down and name motor vehicle officials in all these states. I've visited 13 prisons where they make the plates. And I know for a fact that reflectorized plates do work. And they provide safety, as the 3M people pointed out, in for parked cars, rear end collision, as well as a factor in law enforcement. Much easier for a police officer to see a license plate, read the numbers, be able to tell if that car is stolen, not stolen, just for identification purposes. And at the same time, Oregon has plates that are on the road, and they've been on the road for over 18 years. The early plates, there's paint that's completely faded off. Those plates are not readable. People are still using them. They're not being replaced. They say there's an attrition factor, the motor vehicle department tells me. I find that hard to believe, especially just in the area where I live in Eugene, because I see a lot of those base plates that were issued in 55 with a 56 stamped on them. They are not being replaced. Cars are still on the road. They're not readable. Unless you're like, you know, from here to the wall, and then it's still hard to read. $60,000 was mentioned to recall or use those plates that they already have issued up. It seems to me that the company that's making a plate now could take those plates back. In other words, they're all salvageable. It's metal that can be reprocessed and used over again. And reflectorized plates would be the next issue that seems likely to go to, as they pointed out, with a factor also of weathering. Reflectorized plates do not weather. And the companies, seven companies that I know of that make reflectorized sheeting, will guarantee those plates from 1 year to 5 years to 10 years and more, I'm sure. But it seems to me now that the major thing, the major fact that you should consider is that your plates have been on the road 18 years. That's longer than anybody's ever used plates. And they are in need of reissue. I think that's a valid point that wasn't brought up before. Cost factor, I'd say, is minimal, even if you charge the people $1 one time. I can't see where the $60,000 is. Sure, it's a factor and a big factor, but when you're considering safety and readability and protection for the law enforcement officers who are out on the road trying to enforce the law, trying to, you know, watch for cars that are stolen in crimes, etc., it's a small price to pay.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Kendrick. Are you a student?
Yes, I am.
Or
Yes, sir.
May I ask that, Andy, if we put an effective date on this, like we did here, if I come in and to order a license plate, can I request a reflectorized plate and pay the dollar?
Yes, you could request a duplicate plate. $3 on the expense of this bill. It's $2 for the price of the system and $1 for the reflecting business.
Can these, the supply of license plates that you have, can they be coated with,
No.
No. Okay,
how many motor vehicles would that $60,000 represent?
Well, it would represent, I talked to our inventory clerk yesterday, there were about 145,000 set plates or sets of plates on hand in our inventory. You see, we have 45 officers, field officers handle plates, and they must have in their inventory at all times plates for every month in the year. And this would be the problem. This amendment that we suggested, adopted, when we can get to the place, we could be started probably by the latter part of this year, within 90 or 120 days after the close of the session, and it would take about 12 months before we would have those plates all replaced throughout the state. And then we would be issuing plates, reflectorized plates, to all new vehicles to Oregon, and we could then issue replacement plates. But other than that, we should, because we have plates. The person came in with a December plate and came in today. We couldn't have them manufactured that far in advance. We ordered them in lots of 2 to 3 months at a time. And we have a current contract that's on 273. But I think that should be amended so we could start with reflectorization. Probably within 90 to 120 days after the session. And by July 1st, the respective day, we would be issuing all reflectorized plates.
You brought up a very interesting question. Now, you said that you already have a contract that runs for the when?
So December 31st.
For this year?
Right.
And how many licenses do they produce between now and then?
Well, I would be ordering.
What I'm getting at is, are they capable of reflectorizing those licenses that they're going to be producing for it? Or do they have to under the existing contract?
No, it's not required under the existing. It would be a matter of an amendment to this contract, which would probably pose no problem according to the vendor.
Well, if he's willing to make the adjustment.
This bill, as originally written, would have required us to have a massive issuance of plates within the first year, and then we had a price tag of nearly $2 million on that.
And the way it was amended to take out the way it was originally written, it would have cost required just $1 reflectorized plate fee each year, when we wouldn't be using a plate each year. So section 2 was amended, making it possible and to charge that fee and issue reflectorized plates whenever we do issue a plate. And that, of course, would be the issue about close to $350,000 a year over 200,000 new vehicles a year, over 100,000 new vehicles to the state, and about 36,000 replacement plates.
Well, I think it's just good business to phase it out. There's no reason to.
Well, how many a year do you reissue?
Plate?
Yes.
And between 325 and 350,000.
And you have 140,000 vehicle plates left.
That's right. But if you, Senator, we order, normally they order the fire truck government in periods of 3 months. Like we just placed the order for July and August place. The next one will probably be for September through December.
Why couldn't there be
They should by October.
They will be, probably. That's what he's saying. They'll start changing in there.
In other words, you'll start to use the reflective. Let's see how fast you'll start using the reflective as soon as possible.
That's right.
Whenever
Mr. Chairman, if I may just add a word, the manufacturer who has been the successful bidder on our plates for many years makes reflectorized plates for several other jurisdictions, including Alaska and others.
And Kuwait.
We anticipate no problem of negotiating with them on an adjustment to the contract as soon as this bill is known to be law. So that we could start him on the manufacture of the pressurized plate quite early.
Well, Mr. Hott, what we were talking about is what the inventory you already had. Instead of junking that $60,000 inventory,
we asked for a provision so that we could, or at least we suggested an amendment so we could use up that stock of plate.
Did I understand the amendment to be 75? 1975?
January 1st, 75.
Why did you shove it out there in 75?
Well, so that we would have adequate time. Actually, we originally asked in the bill of 75 when it was going to be a complete changeover.
Yeah.
As it would read now with this amendment, we're reasonably sure that we would be through all the inventory, all the places to be replaced with it by January 1st, 1975, we would be
nothing
but reflectorized plates.
The reason for that is that, as Mr. Shearing said, we have to stock plates to serve the customer in all of our offices, and we must have, let's say, January, February, March, April, May plates on hand to serve the clientele as the business comes to us. Now, next January, 74, we probably won't use up every January plate. And if we have any blue plates left, then we ought to use them, I suppose, unless someone demands a reflectorized plate, which I think we could service for the extra price. But sometime during 1975, I think we'd find ourselves completely converted, depending upon when this act becomes law. If this act should become law in June, then we would be completely converted, I would say, after the next June.
I have a Senator Fee of the head section 4. The effective date of this act is January 1, 1975. But the division changed the May to shall. The division shall begin to issue reflectorized plates after an earlier date as the stock of current designing plates are gone.
The way I understand it anyway, the Motor Vehicle Department, as soon as you authorize them to issue reflectorized plates, they can issue them any time they, so that I don't see where that has to be in the bill as such.
We cannot issue them unless we get them. We have to get the plates first.
Yeah, they want the, I'll entertain the motion to change the major step.
I will.
Then so
moved. Part of the motion will pay for it.
Well, I'd withdraw that. Chairman, I'd like to withdraw that motion
to the bill. Well, I'll
be.
That was withdrawn. Did you know
that?
It can't withdraw. All in favor of changing the native channel, signify by saying aye. Opposed? Anybody else want to be heard on Council 2064?
Chairman, I can move it fast.
Move it out too fast.
I'll move it forward. That's what I was right today.
Do that. Go with the way to it. Make a rather a thorough way. Anything else? It's not the first call. Aye.
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 Aye. And nobody has to carry it because it's just a going right through the way to
it. Oh, very great name.
Wait a minute, don't get excited now, fellas.
We'll let the clerk carry
it. I move you.
Just sit
down.
We've got a whole bunch of bills.
Yeah.
And now,
you know,
what were you here for this morning?
Do we have a bill? All right. He's retired. Lynch is my guy. He comes down to see once he wants to see we're doing the job right. That's
right. He's checked on me for the last 30 years.
That's what he told.
Now, where do we start?
Thank you. Seven drivers.
Let's look at 217. Yeah, here, seven drivers, I think that's all I know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the one about the inspection or safety of the vehicle, okay. Or something like that.
Yeah, right. Well, it helps. It allows the bill anyway.
Yeah.
Where'd you find it?
Where it says out.
It says out.
Say
oh, no. Out. The Senate bill's out.
Well, I've got a copy. I just wanted to get my same note.
Go ahead. What
did you guys do with it? Mr. Chairman, for the record and members of the committee, my name is Dennis Moore, Administrator of the Mass Transit Division. You may recall we discussed this bill and it was passed out, and there was some concern about when school buses are contracted or out to carriers or provided by the school district for public transportation purposes, and they did not compete with intercity carriers, our intent was to exempt them from TUC law, so they would not have to pay the weight mile tax, and they would not be subject to regulation because a school district is, in fact, a public body, presumably protecting the public interest. In so doing, there was concern that we may have exempted these buses from safety codes, and we've done some research, and in fact, that was a valid concern. You recall school buses obviously are inspected by the school district. They must meet state standards for both the equipment design and the safety requirements, etc. The major concern in this respect is you've got a school bus that has met all of state standards. The school district either provides the service or leases those buses out. We had no requirements for driver safety. So the major effect of the amendment here, number 4, would make absolutely sure that buses used for this purpose would still be subject to state law with reference to school bus safety standards and driver safety standards and qualifications. With one exception, school bus drivers can be 18 years old. We suggest that any driver operating the bus for other purposes be 21 years old. This is a normal industry standard. That is basically what the major amendment would accomplish here. Before this bill was passed out of this committee last time, there was a comment to the effect that we wanted to make sure school buses used for public transportation would not compete with any other passenger carrier. But it could possibly compete with a mass transit district. So on line 15, we added at the request of TriMet attorneys and others that we make sure that a school bus operated for public transportation would not compete with a mass transit district, which is another public body. That is the major intent of the amendment on line 15. The amendment on line 16, which now says motor vehicles operated by the district pursuant to this section shall not be subject to ORS chapter 767. That's the CUC exemption. We thought there are the situations where the school district may lease their equipment out and thus would not be per se operated by the district, and under these circumstances should also be exempt from CUC law as long as they met the other criteria here. So that's the essence of the three amendments to this bill.
Excuse me, would they be exempt in, Mr. Chairman, for the weight mile tax?
Yes, sir, that is the intent of this, figuring that they are a public body and tax supported.
Another question. What advantage is this to the public? I mean, as far as the schools are concerned, with the schools, would they realize dollars? I mean, would they gain by this? And if not, I think the bill is useless because it would mean some revenue for our schools if they could do this, and taking into consideration the depreciation, fine. But otherwise, I would certainly oppose it. Jack Shearer would.
Well, of course, the intent of this is not to make money or to cost the district any money whatsoever.
Mr. Chairman, just for his information, we passed one last session on an experimental basis for Klamath Falls, and this is just to continue this. There's federal funding and some other stuff for this work.
Do you have any report on Klamath Falls?
Yeah,
we heard this earlier.
Mr. Chairman, if they're old enough to fight, they ought to be old enough to drive a bus.
That's a lawful horror.
No? I do have one question.
Jack Spears drove the bus when he was 18 or younger.
Is it clear under this that it does not have to be a driver who is hired by the school district to drive? I read it. I think that's what it says. But is it clear to you that drivers of the vehicle shall be at least 21 years of age and shall comply with the rules adopted by the Department of Education under the ORS relating to the qualification of school bus drivers? So it's clear that that can be another driver, not one hired by.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't have to be one hired by the district.
Yes, sir, that is the intent.
As long as you comply with the law, it has to be
because up above it, sub one, you're talking about where they're going to be leased.
I knew that. I read that, but I wanted to make sure we weren't negating down below what we said up above.
I don't see where it says anything about who the driver has to be hired by.
I agree with you, and that's what my purpose is, to do the same thing. I don't want somebody looking at this to say it has to be a school bus driver.
It's a driver of a school bus. I don't see any place that would apply that.
It's on the page here, but that isn't our intent.
Jack may be able to respond to that. We discussed
the technicality built in here, and the minute that thing reverts from school bus use to passenger use, it's no longer a school bus. The vehicle is the same. It's not identified the same. So you put the school bus signs over, and you're not just flashing red lights under the substance run. So technically, it's not a school bus. It's come under the provision of that.
Well, that's bad, because those old folks think those men flashing lights as bad as the little kids.
What's the intent of this bill passes? Are you going to try this throughout the state? I mean, that's...
The intent would be if a school district board wanted to try or develop some kind of program where, for instance, community school program, for instance, to pick up senior citizens or other disadvantaged people in an outlying area to bring them into the school district. If they wanted to, What we would do is work with them and try to design the route, et cetera, follow all state requirements, develop an agreement, and make sure they don't compete with intercity carriers and things like that, sort of sally through all current regulations to allow the use of idle equipment to provide transportation, mostly those people that otherwise would not have it available.
They have a bus driver out there that is takes his own car now and hauls Mr. Malakot several of the senior citizens to the senior citizens' place in Graceland. Now, if this was in effect, then this guy incidentally drives the school bus. It's the same man that drives the school bus, a retired fellow from the Navy. He would take the school bus and drive down to the senior center and then go back up to the next one. But I school district wants to do it.
Chairman, I move the amendment.
This bill doesn't take care of a situation where a school district leases its buses from an operator.
From a transit company.
I guess that's what they call it. A private supplier of buses. I know of the school districts in the state where the buses are not owned by the school district. There's a fellow that owns the school buses and he sets or leases or contracts with the district and they pay him so much to bus the kids. That fellow isn't covered under this.
The school district operates them on line 6. It doesn't say owned, but where they operate them.
A school district board may enter into contract for their motor vehicles operated by the district.
So they're leasing them. They're operating.
Well, I guess that's the definition of operating.
How much is their contract with that?
Of course, the contract would be controlling, but
school board just make that determination.
Well, I'm not so sure that the language tells me that. In other words, why penalize the guy that's got 50 buses that are sitting in his bus barn all afternoon or all day simply because, in this case, the board doesn't own them. He owns them. They're leasing them from him just as if he did own them.
He's a private operator at this time. As long as the school district allowed it, there are different ways of licensing and different responsibilities on contract carriers. Some of them, the school buses are registered in the school district's name, and they have complete control over them. Larson happens to be one that beat by all his buses, so he can use them for other purposes.
Well, Lincoln County leases all their school buses from the Dorsey Bus Company out of Corvallis.
I'm thinking not necessarily a transit company of sorts, but just myself. If I own 20 buses and lease them to the school, and that's all they did was haul students in this, and we wanted to enter in and take advantage of the provisions of this act. Am I covered if I own 20 buses?
You own 20 buses.
And did you enter the into this act?
That's what I'm wondering.
Depends probably on your contract. If the contract with the private person who owns the buses would permit the district to use the buses for other than transporting school children, and if the owner of the buses wanted to use them other than that, you could certainly do it for that act. I don't see anything to stop them from doing it.
The intent.
I think we'll find out for a point. Will
you find out
then,
Corey?
Call the Lincoln County.
I don't know how you're going to find out. I can ask them what they think the word operator means, but they can't tell me any better than I can tell you what the word operator means.
Senator, I think Doug's saying you can't interfere in the right of contract.
I know that, but if the contract didn't prohibit it, will the act prohibit it?
No.
It won't.
No.
Operator operator in this case can be construed to cover a guy that's leasing the buses to the district.
That's what I would say.
Okay, just so long as that's the way it's under.
The authority is with the school district if they want to, because they are operating those buses.
I'm
not
sure it says that, but
if you say it does, I agree.
That's my opinion. I don't know, flat out.
Howard,
would you call the Lincoln County School System and find out, because it's a county unit system, and they lease their buses to the Dorsey Bus Company in Corvallis.
We could clear it up very easily by just after the word motor vehicles online, says motor vehicles owned or leased and operated by the district, and that should take care of it.
Yeah, but if they still got an existing contract.
Well, of course, you can't. There's nothing to do that's going to change that contract between the school district and the owner of the bus.
The hang-up is on what the word operating means, and they're not going to be able to sell.
But the thrust of this bill, as I read it, it says the first line, a school district board may enter into contract. And then it goes on and tells them what they can do. And
well, the big contract, school district contract, with Mr. Larson.
The whole school kid.
Yeah, but this isn't the contract they're talking about.
I think
this
the contract. Let me turn it around. The key in here is it does not say owned by the school district. It just says operated by a school district.
But they're not operated by the school district. They're operated under a contract with the Dorsey
Bus
Company.
They're operated because they're operated under.
Well, you could put or operated under lease.
Yeah, but that's what it probably is. They probably say to Dorsey, "We need 100 buses to haul kids. Now, can you furnish it?"
Who operates them, Stan?
Dorsey.
Dorsey operates them.
Well, Mike's concern is in Pendleton, for example, Mr. Kilby owns the fleet of buses. He contracts with Pendleton school system to haul the students.
Well, you don't have any senior citizens up in your area, though, do you?
I guess probably not.
But
all I want to make sure is that if Pendleton wanted to then take advantage of what I read to be the provisions of this act, and Kilby wants to do it,
I don't think there's any benefit to do it.
What I get such a hard nose about is because I had a row with the CUC commissioner this year already on what I said legislative intent was. And they said, well, that isn't what the law says. We don't give a damn what your legislative intent was. The law says you can't do it. And if you don't change law, then we're not going to go along with it. I said, hell, that wasn't what the legislative intent was. I said, I carried the bill. And he said, that doesn't mean a damn thing. We can't do it. The law says it's here.
Following the word district, you just put operated by the district or operated or under lease from a private owner, anything like the appropriate word would cover it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
we should adopt the concept and have them.
Appropriate language item that would cover that.
Follows the word operate by the district or under lease, whatever the wording would be.
Aye.
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 Those two guys voted aye. Chairman, I'd like to ask a question on 2454, which had a prior reference to Ways and Means. With the amendments that we put in that bill, there isn't any fiscal impact. Could you talk with the President to have him withdraw that prior reference to Ways and Means? There's no reason for it to go to Ways and Means now. There is no fiscal impact. Reflectorized license plate. When you put the amendment in, it says you can use up the old plate. So I don't even see where there's any fiscal impact at all on the bill anymore.
That's right. There wouldn't be any impact.
We talked so about it.
Fine,
why don't you talk to the President to have him withdraw the...
I'll go to the President.
No.
Mr. Chairman, I assume we're finished with 270.
Oh, no, we're not.
What are you talking
about? You'll have to excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I'm a government official, and I'm not accustomed to so much levity so early in the morning.
We know what we're doing. It doesn't look like
thank you.
Well, what are we going to do with 217? Or
it's out.
How did it get out?
We voted it out.
No, we didn't.
You weren't paying attention, Thorne and the rest of us.
We didn't even
and
vote.
Groner. You voted aye.
I heard you.
We didn't either.
We got leased in there. We took care of your amendment.
Vote now.
Well, I'm not sure that you did. That's what I'm
saying.
We did.
Yeah.
All I heard was Ivory say something about, well, something appropriate language.
That's right. Yeah,
we adopted.
More over here saying, well, I'm trying to get it down because I don't know what it is.
Well, we adopted the conception of it, and he's going to get
what's
the legal
language.
Call the Thorne Amendment.
What's the language?
Whatever language that would encompass what you want is what we did. So Mike, really.
We voted on the amendment. But we didn't vote the bill out.
Yes, we did.
What was the roll call on the vote going out?
Everybody voted aye.
Huh?
There was two votes that said aye, and then there's...
What do you want
to say? Tell them what the amendment is.
We adopted a conception that would take care of you two people, that where the buses were owned by a private but were leased. Now, whatever language that is, Legislative Council will come up with a technical language that would accomplish that. In other words, we adopted the amendment conceptually.
Oh, is that what it is?
That's it.
I knew there was going to be a sneaky word in there, George.
You understand conceptions.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I knew all about that.
Whatever language it takes to do that, that's what we adopted.
Right. Right. Now we got the amendment.
I'm afraid you're too close to that.
You want to vote again on,
you vote on the amendment? All right.
Well, we didn't vote on the amendment.
Oh, all right. You
voted on that.
I'll say aye in the amendment. Now let's take a shot at the bill.
Right, now, take a shot at the bill. The first vote is
aye.
Aye. Aye.
Now it's legal.
Why do we want to look at it if it's tabled?
Yeah, let's not look at it.
You're
151, not my bill.
Oh,
yeah, we tabled it.
Oh, I see.
Right. Okay, all what we want to do is delete all of the bill, and in the title on line 2 would be repealing, well, I don't know what the
subsection
is. Subsection 5 of 483.112. And I'll tell you what it does. We found this to be an appropriate vehicle.
We agreed on this.
This is, and that's the requirement now of these radar signs, which is costing quite a bit of money to the cities and the states to put up speed checked by radar. There's no need of it anymore.
I move we take it off the table.
And
we haven't got enough votes to get it off the table.
Well, we move. Senator Tia moves to take it off the table, first of all.
Senator Tia moves to take
151 off the table.
151 off the table.
I'd like to. Would it be proper to know why we're taking off the table, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Just what I said. So that we can use this to repeal this requirement of these radar signs, which are no
need.
It's
not going to be 151 anymore when they come.
I understand what's happening now. I see. You need a number.
We need a number.
Oh, well, why didn't you tell me that?
Well,
you have to
move away from Otter so you can hear what's going on.
If you get up and sit on this side of the table, you'd be better off.
I understand what's going on.
Did anybody say that?
Aye.
Okay. Off the table now.
I move that 151 be amended as follows. From line 5 to the end of the bill, it would be deleted.
Line 5.
On line 2, it be changed from amending ORs to repeal subsection 5 of 483.112. And that would be it. And that's the requirement to post these radar signs, because
I think we all know it's an accepted way of checking speed by radar.
I bet they've probably done something other than that.
We have a letter from the city of Beaver saying it's going to cost about 25, no. Quite a bit of money just to replace the signs that they have, and you multiply it by the state, this is going to save the people at least $50,000.
Great. I didn't get a letter from Newport. Nobody told me anything.
Well, they're a little behind down there, but you'll get it eventually.
Oh, well, we'll wait then.
We're repealing what? 483112?
Sub 5.
485112.
485.
483, you said 485. I'm all right on that.
Okay, now, why are we doing that other than the cost of maintaining the signs? Are you assuming that people know they're on radar anyway?
I think it's generally accepted means of checking speed is radar. Now, when they first went in, of course, you know, there was controversy about the use of radar, and so someone said, put up signs and let people know you're doing it. But, Lord, everyone knows they use radar now. It is expensive. And if you want to look at it from the ecology, it's just one more dang sign to confuse you as you're driving.
I like the ecology part.
Let's do away with the whole radar scheme completely, huh?
That's another matter. We've got another bill table we can do that on.
Why not stick it in here?
All the things in the
I move out, you pass is amended.
Now, before you do it, I ask one question. Did you check the center of the person? You're jacking up your deal and putting a complete new deal on you. This Saturday?
Which
I will.
He won the table the other deal. He asked for it, he takes it. I think it's all right.
Yeah, well, should we do a subject, and I'll talk to him and see that he has no objection.
I wouldn't think of any objection, but I think it's good if it's.
He should be happy to have his name on it. Good deal.
All in favor of the motion to pass out. Senate Bill 151, the due pass is amended.
I'd like to look at the names of all the voters.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And now saved at least $50,000 in my entire salary for this.
You're both to reconsider.
Get away. Don't say that to the auditor.
Now, what I wanted to do was get under the thing I failed on my phone.
Well, see, you let it go.
Senator, can we have Doug, our legislative counsel, come up on this one?
Will you explain what you're doing?
He was trying to get his car truck.
Hey, Bill.
Well, see, this is just
the only one there was. I did.
The uniform states bond organization in D.C. recommends no less than 6 months from the 90 days.
I just don't know about the uniform. I know the guys in the Department of Motor Vehicles sat here and told us he thought 30 days was most effective. Yeah.
Why don't you just leave it where it is?
Right.
Leave it well enough alone.
The 90 days is where it should stay.
Well, what would you tell your client if it was 6 months?
He better take the test if he thought he had his chance to meet him. That's an automatic 6 months.
Take a trip to Europe, I'd tell them.
Well, I think that's what we want to do, is to force them to take the test.
That's the purpose.
And you
said
in 90 days you tell them not to do it.
Well, I sometimes do, yes. Because if I think that it's better up to the guy, if he says, well, I've had problems with the inoculant, it's questionable. I've had four down the road, I might come up pretty high on this. And he's been thinking about it. He's great. He thinks about these things. He's not gonna gamble on taking the test at 30 days. He's gonna automatically refuse. I just don't think there's any question about it.
All right.
90 days, sometimes you'll refuse. Yeah. 6 months, I think probably he's not gonna take the test when he finds it. Obviously, the more the penalty is, the more he's gonna be forced to coerce into taking it.
I move we amend it to 6 months. 180 days.
I'm going to move it to the motor vehicle department. They would love to have it around, leave it at the 90 days, because after 90 days, that man can be back driving with an insurance policy. But with 6 months, he's driving without a license, and he's driving without insurance. The longer you stretch it out, the longer you're going to have this.
But you see, Mr. Chairman, that's where I had the problem myself. We're talking about two different things. One of them, which is this one, is what happens if they refuse to take the breath test.
Yeah,
that's one thing. The thing that I got confused on, the other is if you drive with a suspended license. That's something else again. We have a bill that increases the penalties for that. And so the whole set point of this bill is to make sure that they take the breath test. And as Howard said, at 30 days they won't take it, because if they do take it and they have alcohol blood content, then it's 90 days. But if they refuse to do it, it's 30 days. So they're better off refusing it. At 90 days, it's the same thing either way.
Well,
180 days, it isn't. If you take it, it's a stiffer penalty. If you don't take it, then if you do take it, finally you got it.
The Motor Vehicle Division did testify in favor of this bill. The comment you're referring to was on another bill. It was Don Stewart.
Yeah. Coach Cole Roll amending the 1 year of 99 to
36. What did you prefer, Mr. Chairman?
Leave it as is.
I don't want to force the people to be on the road around the truck any longer than they have.
But if you see, we're talking about, the only thing I want to make clear, we're talking about two different crimes.
Yeah.
One is for refusing to take the breath test. That's existed. The other is if you drive with a suspended license, which is another bill.
They're very closely related, so I'm very interwoven.
All in favor of the motion, will think about it, say aye.
Aye.
No.
No?
No.
I move the bill be tabled.
Now, you do want to take out subsection 3. You want to delete line 17 through 23.
It has to be amended anyway.
You've changed the notice provisions in 637, another bill you worked on last week, and I don't think you want these notice provisions in there.
Move that we restore the language on line 9 and delete the new language on 9 line. And delete subsection 3. We tried, Jill. Just went down a plane.
You guys forgotten what we told you in the hearing.
Bloody red
button. Sometimes they try too much.
You merge 20 bills and come up with a mulligan to do.
I move that we restore the language of 90 days on line 9. Delete the new language on 9 line. And delete subsection 3.
Right.
We need the bill to delete subsection 3.
All in favor of the motion, signify by saying
aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Aye. What's the point?
Well, now, where's that other bill that we...
637.
I don't want to do one without the other. Can we pass it out?
Go ahead, Alan.
Please look it up on that. 637. We talked about establishing the donor's notice requirements. The motor vehicle department must meet when serving notice for any reason. Whenever they have to serve a driver, it has anything to do with affecting his license, whether it's the same year and notice for any reason. We set up notice requirements. These notice requirements said this is SB 637. There was some talk last time we considered this about combining this with 353, and I think legislative council there and the agreement that these bills both serve completely different purposes and go in different directions and really are separate matters and shouldn't be combined. Is that right, Mr. Moore?
I know I gave you a promise not to say anything against you on this, but that was the case until now. They've changed the suspension period, so it is no different. They haven't done anything. The only thing they've done to 353, the only change you've made to 353, is the change in the notice. Right, so now I think it is appropriate to combine it with 637, because that's the only change they've made in the bill, is notice. See, they haven't done anything else to it. They've return to the original 90 days. The bill is not regarding suspension anymore. The bill, the only purpose of the bill now is to delete the notice requirement. So I think it is appropriate.
Well, what do you do? By putting the notice requirement to 637 and 353?
I just would add another section to 637. I would add another section that would amend ORS 482540. And I would amend it as this bill is doing here, and then I would table 353 if that's your pleasure. If you do want to combine the bill,
I think that's what we talked about last time. Amend 353 by deletion.
Technically, I want to understand what we're doing. We do not have to write into 540 the same language. It follows, doesn't it? It's in the same section. So this notice.
The notice you're referring to in 637
right.
applies to every suspension that the division issues.
Right. Okay, then let us move on that, so we will have amended 353. And once we've done that, I want to move all the language that's in 353 into 637.
No. In 637, you want to repeal sub 3. 482540.
Right. You've already
that's
done
all
that.
All you have to do.
That you've already adopted that amendment to 353.
But we want to put it in 637.
Right.
We don't have to do anything.
So we just table 353.
Well, wait a minute.
After we move it.
Right.
No, maybe we can do what George said. It's make another
new section in 637.
Section three of Yeah. Of 637, that's the way to go at this?
Right.
And then we'll say
repeal subsection 3 of...
Repeal subsection 3 of ORS 482540. That's the correct...
Well, that's the intent. You can make that... The amendment would technically have to read... Section 3 of 637 would have to read... You would have all of that printed up. And this would be printed up and bracketed out. See, because the Constitution requirements, you have to set out in full the section that you are amending.
Well,
so
if
I would
you
have
do it, if you do the whole ORS, then you can just say ORS so-and-so is repealed. But if you repeal a section of it, you have to amend.
Right, you have to set out the whole thing and then bracket
out.
That's
what I said earlier. So what I want to do is amend 353 first so we know what we've done. And then I'm going to take all of that and move it over into 637. We did do that.
That's really what we're talking about.
All right, then I move that we move the language starting at line 4 on page 2 of 353, that language, everything that we've done there. I move that we make that a new section 3 of 637.
Is that right, Jeff?
That's right.
Senator Steele moves that we amend the language in precept, remove the language from the precept of three from the. I got it.
Starting at line 4, page 2, from the precept of 3, everything we have done, and we said, yeah, a new section 3 of the precept of 3.
It's the same way. We know what language we're talking about. It, whether it's on here or on a certain piece of paper, that's what we're doing.
And now we're going to say the number, Mr. Chairman.
You
want to
leave that for you.
All in favor of amendments, signify by saying
aye.
Aye. And opposed?
Now I move we table Senate Bill 353.
Now let's do something with 637. That's the page, please.
I move that due passage as amended.
Move on. Senator Steele moves Senate Bill 637 to the floor due passage as amended. Any other questions? First call roll.
Steele?
Aye.
Aubrey?
Aye.
Sherman? Holmeson? Allison?
Aye.
Thorne?
Aye.
Sherman? Aye. Now I'll entertain a motion to table 352.
I make that motion.
Motion to amend the table. Senate Bill 352. All in favor of the motion, or as the ayes are in the call, those opposed, no.
Akia.
Aye.
Aubrey.
Aye.
Sherman.
Holmeson.
Aye.
Thorne.
Aye.
Mr. Sherman. Senate Bill 451. Senator Thorne moves that.
Now, be careful. Be careful.
Delete the 20s.
And
the third 5.
I have had a call in for
Irv,
and I have been. I'm trying. Mr. Chairman, I'm working on it. I've got a note handed to my secretary, and she's been trying to get him for 2 days.
What do you need him for?
I need to talk about whether that's what I'm talking about. He was one of the guys that recently got this bill through, and
nobody was.
And I just feel like out of courtesy, I'm talking about
it. We were listening.
This enacts the Abandoned Vehicle Act.
We had a conference with some of the House and Legislative Council and everything. There's two or three other bills that are in covering this. There's a bill providing for reimbursement and everything. Anyhow, the gist of this meeting was the Motor Vehicle Department prefers 686 subject to incorporating some of these other provisions. They would like to get the bill over there to the House transcript where they've done a lot of the speed work and everything. And use 686 as a vehicle, but take some of the House bills and come up with a total package.
Why do they want to do it over there?
Well, they have done most of the work, or they have the two, about three or four House bills over there.
Is it in House Transportation?
Yeah.
It's in-house transportation.
House transportation.
And they want something to go in that bear trap?
Well,
good God, Ivory.
You know, I sat up there in House Transportation and there was a motion to pass the bill out of committee and the motion failed and the chairman said the bill was dead for the session because the motion failed to pass out of committee.
I know that it's a problem committee and everything, but Representative Willis is working with the Legislative Council and everyone concerned motor vehicles to put together this.
Well, they've got this bill. Let's hold this bill right here.
Sure.
They've got this bill. They can work with it over there.
Why don't I just tell them?
They don't need this bill, do they, George?
Well, we're going to have to then make all the amendments when it comes over here, then.
They don't have a bill?
They have a different bill, but this is really the bill they want. They're these provisions, the Uniform Act. This is the only one that has the Uniform Act.
We have Mark Nelson from Transportation. Maybe he can tell us a little about it.
Well, as far as the committee, I've sort of pulled the committee. The committee is very interested in doing something about the abandoned vehicle. We have a bill, 2955, before us now, which merely shifts the cost responsibility from the removal of the abandoned vehicles from the county to the state, to the motor vehicle system. We also have 2962, which would impose a $5 tax on all cars sold, either used or new in Oregon, used for 8 years, and then that part of the program drops. And then it continues for all new cars. We have a copy of 1040 from the last session. We met with Legislative Council yesterday, a lot of interested parties, and we worked it out so that they would take 686 and incorporate.
I
know it's a chance as far as you view it as a chance.
Like a kamikaze to me.
But I can just about guarantee that the committee will go with
it. We would have to have, no matter what they did, we would have to have a conference committee report on it.
Mm-hmm. You know, Chairman, I sat over there and watched the bill that I testified on and a half an hour being out and sent the floor and back and out the table. I don't know whether I could trust that over there.
Well, I think we can, but then
you do?
I do. I think.
Now, why can't you just take this bill just the way it is? You've got no nerve on it. And just jack up your house bill, apply this with others, and amend this one, and then send it to the floor the way you want, or it comes over here in a normal fashion. Is there any price off the ship?
If he's already talked and then wants to go there, that's fine. It's his bill.
Yeah.
If he wants to take that chance,
I'm willing to take a chance because I think we worked out an agreement that we're
going to be able to get on that.
Well, the bill in and of itself would fly on its own, and I think it could. But you think there's
ways to meet? It says there's no dollar amount. He wants to go that way. That's his bill. But what are you going to do with that dollar amount, George?
Yeah. Well, we're not going to put any dollar amount in until it gets over. And
is it in your bill?
No, there's no dollar amount.
Blank dollar amount.
Blank.
How are you going to get that through the Senate floor without flying around like a turkey?
No, it isn't, because the bill is complete, could pass and survive the way it is.
I don't care.
If you want to make it complete and send it over. Then you don't have to worry about
it. Could they fix the package together and then and we'll adopt it here and send it out?
If you want, we'll have legislative council bring you the amendment over here. The only thing we're worried about was time.
Right.
And we can bring you the
amendment. All right, bring the amendments over here.
And
bring the amendment
over here.
All right.
This will be an unusual situation for us guys to send the bill down here with the old dollar amount.
Well, it could go to Ways and Means eventually.
It goes to Ways and Means.
See that they would put
there,
the.
Then you agree to be
well, we send a lot of things out to Ways and Means where they put the dollar amount.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
There's nothing unusual about that.
But Mr. Chairman, really, you know, I respect what Senator Ivers is talking about. You know, I would think as a committee, we'd look kind of silly on the floor if someone said, well, wait a minute, guys, you know, what's going on?
Well, I would say if it were an incomplete bill, I'd agree with it, but it isn't. It's,
yeah.
We just passed it.
I remember a bill came out of elections the other day that the guy carried it and says, you know, I can see the last time I'm going to fucking get it myself.
Fine. Let's say council going on right now.
Okay.
I'm waiting for you.
I'll have you some
hay.
I think I'll demonstrate.
Did you check on 595 seasonality of that?
Mm-hmm.
And now, does everybody know what we did this morning?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My faculty likes.
Instead,
I read that.
We ought to make.
Can I?
My
don't go away. I have a fight with you.
Right, one bird, right.
My chairman is a player of this one.
Lane Bowlby, Oregon Gasoline Dealers Association, 4636 Southeast Popcorn. I found out I wasn't as smart as my friends from the tire industry here because they only brought the cross sections and I lugged those tires all the way up here to show you what they look like. But I would like to give you a little bit of a rundown on maybe how to use those tools. If I fail here, well, I'm sure Dan can back me up. I wouldn't have known anything about tires if I hadn't been in the tire business, and there's quite a little bit to learn about it, so that might help to understand that 2/32 business. Now, this is a tread gauge like all you have there. It's a little bit different. There's other kinds that come with a round gauge and so forth. And your tread is measured like this. You read the gauge on the top here. Now, usually a new tire will have 12/32, stop me if I'm wrong, Dan. And sometimes in a cheaper grade tire, possibly a recap or a price leader, they might have as low as 8 or 9 or 10. Depends on the camelback and the manufacturer and what the tire was made for. Very seldom do they go over the 12/32 because if you've ever wondered why they don't have tires with deeper tread, it's because there's a happy medium, and when it gets past a certain point, why the tread builds up heat, which has a tendency to throw the tread and to have longer wear. Now, this bill, let's get back to this tire again. First of all, most people think that when you put the brakes on a car, well, it's the brakes that stop the car. And of course, that's just part of the system. They do, they make contact with the brake drum. But what you have actually stopping the car, making the tire to surface, to road surface contact, is an area about the size of the palm of your hand. And of course, in times of stress and so forth, why you have even less than that. So you're talking lots of times that you have an automobile that's
two or three or almost four tons coming at you at great speeds, and this is all that you've got between possibly an accident or losing control. And then the tread has another vital factor in the tire makeup. It supports the sidewall too. When your tread becomes lower, while the sidewall becomes weakened, and it helps, or it's more conducive to rolling and so forth in times of stress. In fact, I was mad at myself this morning. I got home and last night, and here was the latest edition of Popular Science. And on the very front page of the thing, it's got an article on tires and tire safety, and even had skid charts. And I was going to bring that down and show it to you this morning, but I fortunately got up about half awake and left it there. So if anybody's interested, I could obtain more copies of that thing for you, which does show the chart on. Now, everything is pretty well down in Dan's kit there that he's presented to you, and that yellow sheet particularly. And one thing that I think is important is that 90% of the tire trouble usually occurs in the last 10% of wear of the tire. And of course, where Lincoln comes in there is that if you take him and turn him upside down, like so, I can hear, if the top of his head can touch the tread, well then you have more than 2/32. If you can see the top of his head, well then the tire is probably in an unsafe condition, and that's an easy test that anybody could make. Dan, do you want to...
Is that a good tire, or is that just 32 seconds?
This is, depends on who you measure this tire. This is probably a bad tire here. Mm-hmm. And this tire, is one thing I'd like to show you is wear bars, just if you can see it. So, that is the one that's put in by the manufacturer, and you can see this bar and so forth. Well, that means it's timed in an unsafe condition. I think one of the good things that I didn't mention on it about the bill, and one of the intents is that this would alert people in the service stations as well as the customer to tell him to keep watching for this tire when it gets down to this point, to tell him that he's getting to a dangerous stage. I think everybody gets carried away in everyday business and forgets to look at these tires. I've done it myself, and they wear faster than you think. And so I believe by having this law, I would help our people to be more alert, to alert the motors. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to sell more tires. They might sell them just a little sooner, but it will keep them on the alert. About the size of mine, Dan.
That's 2/32?
Yes, sir. You can get it to zero just by flattening it here, and you can see that the gauge is active, so you can set it really easy back.
One of the two shows right on the top.
And then you push it down to the line right underneath that two, and that is 2/32. Doesn't look like very much.
Is that safe?
No. Maybe I better start this plumber. My name is Dan Grimshaw. That's the Oregon Tire Dealers Association, and also past president of the Tire Dealers and Retailers Association. Tire dealers in Portland, Oregon. Been in business all my life. Back in as of July of 1968. All tires that have been manufactured since that time by requirement of the U.S. Department of Transportation have a built-in tread wear indicator, or wear bar, as you call it, as Wayne was pointing out. And this is to warn motorists when the tread does get down to 2/32 or 1/16 of an inch. To show you here on these sections, there might be a little more difference. Section 1 is just now reaching the tread wear indicator in the two center grooves. You can also see over in the side grooves how it is built in. It's just little rays of rubber, 2/32 high at the bottom of the groove. This one is a little more demonstrative, and it shows all the way across the face of the tire in this particular tire, number two. So it's very readily seen when it's on a car. When it gets down to that point. Prior to then, you can hardly see anything, any difference in the tread, until it gets down to that tread wear indicator. At the present time, there are some 31 or 32 states which require a minimum
safe tread depth of 230 seconds. There are 9 other states which ban unsafe or bald or damaged hair, and as of 1971, there were only 2 states, as you can see from this map. The black ones are requiring 230 seconds. The blue ones require have some sort of a bald tire law. And the white ones are states that have no minimum tread depth written or any safety tread depth written into their law at that time. This has not been updated. This is as of 71 last year. This only shows 29. There were 3 more that adopted it, 32, and we anticipate even more this year at various legislatures around the country. One of the reasons for having a minimum tread depth is obviously safety. There have been some actual test runs, and one survey showed that close to 1 out of 3 cars have at least 1 bald tire or unsafe tire on them. The risk of a flatter blowout at 230 seconds is 10 times that of a new tire. Even worse, a completely bald tire, you have is 44 times more likely to have a flat than a new tire. Obviously, the bald tire will skid much more readily on a wet road. In fact, 10 to 20 times greater than a tire with an average tread depth. We feel that for safety as well as convenience, motorists should have a minimum of 230 seconds tread depth. Across the bottom of the blue chart, you can see some of the other things that are in the bill. Shows the tread depth indicators pictorially. It also shows the 1/16 by using the Lincoln head penny. Also in the bill, it mentions tread cuts, cracks, or with exposed cords, and any front exposures or not that might evidence a defect in the tire. As a tire dealer and being in the tire industry, we feel that tires are not, and this is referring to the yellow sheet here. Tires are not designed to be worn clear smooth. Normal sidewall thickness is just designed to protect the fabric, and that's about the same amount of rubber as you have under the tread. And we feel that the tread portion should have a little greater protection, at least a minimum of 230 seconds. The tread wear indicators were developed as a safety requirement by the Department of Transportation, and at the present time, obviously, they're not being utilized in Oregon. Many studies indicate that about 90% of the tire problems that people have occur in the last 10% of tread wear. And one of the things that we are faced with very greatly here in Oregon is the possibility of hydroplaning. Now, this is a driving condition frequently associated with driving in the rain. Cars without sufficient tread depth have all the characteristics of a water ski. And it's likely that when they go through a puddle or something, the tire actually stops. It'll ride on top of the water. And obviously, there is little if any control of that car when the tire is hydroplaned. We feel that even if the motorist has the average tread depth, the chances of sitting on a wet road surface are 5 to 10 times greater than a dry surface. But if he's riding on near bald tires, 230 seconds or less, the chances of losing control are up to 20 times as great. So we feel that the minimum safe tread depth it might have all the earmarks of a commercial venture, but with so many other states already adopting it and using it, we feel that it's basically a safety feature for the motor. And the little kit that I put there is a kit that is available to the public for less than $1. In fact, we often give them away with the entire purchase. It contains an actual tread depth gauge, which you've seen. We also encourage air pressure checks regularly, and it has some tire kits in there. And the yellow valve cap is to remind you to check your air pressure with the yellow gauge. Any questions?
Thank you. Any questions?
Dan, do we have any statistics that we know of in relation to motor vehicle accidents and tires?
I think Major Kitchener might be in a greater position to answer that question. But tires have not been directly on any accident reports as a cause of this fact.
There have been studies in other states. Washington ran a study. I can dig out some figures, but the thing is, it's sort of like the manure shock absorber ad. Yeah. We don't know how many accidents were caused, but we have some newspaper accounts where they have lane tires. And there are just too many one-car accidents where they end up in a ditch or wrapped around a telephone pole that they don't know why it happened. And in many cases, you'll find smoke on the car. But they can't say that's what caused it.
Senator Vanita Howard can answer that.
I don't have the exact numbers, but we do have a number of fatal accidents that we do have to tire blew out or we'll get a report from seeing that the trend is very low or tire in the fall. I can get that information from a little later. But many times we do indicate after an accident that it's sometimes very difficult to tell by looking at the car that everything that might have happened, tires may be flat, but you don't know.
Can a person just use the penny rather than the gadget? Yes. In fact, they don't even have to use the penny yet. And if their tires were built since 1958. Oh, it's just whereby? All they have to do is look at the tire, and as they stick to be fixed here, it gets pretty obvious when you get down to 230 seconds. But, well, now, if your tread is thin. This one, you showed us two. One went across, and this one? This one is just starting to show in the middle. And I brought this so you could see how they're built into the tire.
Is this an alert thing, and that is time to change?
Right.
Any further questions? That's all. Thank you. Dan, Wayne? Major? I guess that's what it is this morning. Is this the first of the month?
Yes, sir. It's a little past. I have 15 days. Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, I'm Major Kitchen of the State Police. I know you're tired of hearing testimony. I'm going to make it brief. I have nothing to add with what has been said with this exception. We have no law at the present time that deals with anything in tire safety. We endorse this particular piece of legislation so that we'll have a working tool and a gauge upon which to base the adequacy and the safety of tires.
If your people are out on the road much, see lots of cases of curbs. Tire ball tires are blown out and caused accidents.
It is a hazard. As a matter of fact, like Vanita was stating, insofar as the accident report itself is concerned, we've attached a little additional flyer to our accident report wherein from our observations what defects may have been attributed to a particular accident. And faulty tires is one of the major causes from our observation of accidents due to faulty equipment. Now, I'll have to qualify this to this extent. The equipment failures are very low on the overall causation of accidents. It's usually a driving error, but as far as equipment is concerned, tires is one of the main causes.
Fine. That's all
that's
signed up for 657.
Mr. Chairman, could I speak just a moment on that?
On this car?
Yeah.
Yeah. You are signed up there, Kelly. No, you're over
I'm,
here on...
I'm another bill. I'm just speaking as a driver and as a private citizen, and I'd just like to point out to the committee that there are a few factors that this bill doesn't address itself to, and I think it is a somewhat simplistic solution to the problem of tire safety. In the first place, as far as hydroplaning goes, one of the significant factors in that is tire width, and the wide tires such as this F78 tire are much more susceptible to hydroplaning than some of the narrower tires. Also, you're talking about wet weather or dry weather, and actually a tire with less tread depth has better friction, better skid resistance than a tire with deep tread on dry pavement. So it's strictly a wet weather phenomenon that you're talking about tread depth. Another thing that should be considered is tire construction, whereas a bias ply tire such as these is undoubtedly a weaker tire in the sidewall when the tread depth is reduced. A radial ply tire, particularly one with a steel belt under the tread portion of the tire, has substantially equivalent puncture resistance even when the tread is worn down close to the surface. So I think that there are other factors to be considered in this matter, and one more thing is, as the witness testified, it is somewhat difficult sometimes to ascertain where you should put your penny on this tire to measure your tread depth. You may have a tire that is substantially sound except for a few places which are worn because of misalignment problems, and that would not particularly affect the skid resistance of the tire.
Thanks, Frank. You might want to stay right there. Frank, call on you. Stay right there and take 658.
Just a few words on 658. You're all aware of the great interest nationwide in the question of so-called no-fault automobile insurance. The Department of Transportation conducted a study, and the President has recommended to Congress and to the states that each state adopt legislation that will reform in some way the old system of automobile accident reparations. And many of the states have adopted such laws. There is terrific pressure on the states, as witnessed by the number of bills in this session of our legislature, to change the automobile accident reparation system. Now, at the last session, Oregon did that. It adopted the provisions, part of which are the subject of this bill, which require that every policy of automobile liability insurance provide certain first-party benefits to the insured and his family and guests and so forth, under which medical expenses are covered and loss of wages would be covered. The idea is to pay the benefits to people that are injured in automobile accidents so they don't become a social burden, and so that there is reduced pressure for litigation. It is felt that the litigation is not the best solution to the problem. Now, the heat is on the states to expand this concept, and one of the ideas is to substitute these first-party benefits for the right to sue, and all kinds of schemes are proposed where you don't get to sue if your benefits are less than $2,000 or less than $1,000 of your medical expenses, and so forth. But at the very least, under any of these concepts of no-fault insurance, there has to be automatic payment of medical expenses and loss of time to the injured person. Then whether you can sue or not is a subject of difference of opinion in the various versions of no-fault insurance. This bill, however, goes just in the opposite direction. This bill is removing from the law the automatic medical payments and loss of time feature. And certainly this is a legislative policy question to settle. Basically, it doesn't affect the insurance world as far as we are connected with it, one way or the other. But we are under the gun of Congress and of the President to move forward in this no-fault automobile insurance area, and I just think that this bill is going in the other direction and would be a mistake.
Francis, California Supreme Court just ruled that you cannot waive the gas taxes. That insurance companies must continue to charge for motorcycles, but they try to steer over into the automobile field. This liability that we're talking about here extends to the gas and the car.
Yes, the present law requires the policy to cover the insured and members of his family and guests and pedestrians by these automatic first-party benefits. But this bill would make that coverage optional with respect to the insured and his family.
I The Supreme Court of California just ruled that you couldn't waive the guest statute. And I would think that if you read the opinion, that the same thing would be, the court would probably rule the same way here.
Yeah, well, Mr. Town, I'm not an attorney, and I'm not sure just how closely related that is to this. Our bill now, and this bill, wouldn't have any effect on the legal obligation of a person to pay benefits to a guest passenger. That is entirely outside the scope of the bill. What it does say is, under our present law, that you must provide in your policy for automatic medical benefits to your guests.
If but if they, I didn't have it, Frank, I wouldn't be able to predict what he's my guest.
You might not be able to meet your obligation. Yeah, that's true. But
this is what this was based on. It was based on a motorcycle that had a guest on the back, and they said the company had waived the guest part of the policy, and the Supreme Court ruled that you could not waive the guest part of a passenger car.
Of course, this bill doesn't affect this mandatory coverage as far as guest passengers are concerned. I don't know what Senator Stevenson has in mind on this. Perhaps it's the fact that some people already have medical coverage, and this, to some extent, is duplicative of that coverage. But as a broad solution to the problem of automobile insurance accidents and the effects of those accidents, we feel that there should be, and the legislation last session was developed by a committee that was broadly representative of the public, the insurance industry, the attorneys, and it was felt at that time that it was a very practical solution to the problem, and the insurance commissioner is anxious that our law be continued basically unchanged for at least the interim until the next session, because we have only had about 6 to 8 months full experience under our present law. And in fact, Senator Cole has a bill in that will expand the limits of our existing law, and that is basically the position that we favor.
Is that in Washington?
Senator Cole here in Oregon has a bill to modify our present law to make the $3,000 increase to $5,000, and the $500 loss of income, I think, would increase to $750. That's being heard right now.
Any questions? Yeah, not thank you, Frank.
Yep.
That will end the hearing on 6:58, unless there's anybody else that wants to testify on it. We'll move along to 6:56 and Benita Howard.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Benita Howard, Public Information from Motor Vehicles. Senate Bill 656 is a bill that we favor. We think that there perhaps could be some modifications in the language of the bill. We have been receiving for several years from the chief medical examiner copies of blood alcohol tests taken on traffic accident victims, and then this information has been correlated with other traffic accident reports that we received. In fact, it was only when we started receiving this blood alcohol information from the medical examiners that the true extent of drinking in fatal accidents began to be obvious, because our other statistics indicated a much lower figure. During this same period of time, efforts had been made by the chief medical examiner to increase the level of fatalities on which we've been getting this blood alcohol information. Last year, we received blood alcohol reports on more than 72% of all drivers killed in traffic. And when other victims are included, passengers and pedestrians, 61.5% of all traffic victims in Oregon. By comparison, in 1968, we were getting blood alcohol reports on only about 38% to 39% of the traffic victims. The present federal highway safety standard on alcohol in relation to highway safety recommends such tests on the bodies of all drivers and all pedestrians 15 years of age or older, who die within 4 hours after involvement in a crash. they're revising that standard, and the proposed revision would require a test to be made on the bodies of all drivers and pedestrians 16 years of age or older who die as a result of the crash. Now, we prefer that the level be either about 13 or 14. We have had, believe it or not, some traffic fatalities on 13-year-olds that had blood alcohol reading, so it does go down that low. We've never had anyone younger than that so far. We also think that it's important that these blood tests be taken on all victims, not just on drivers and pedestrians, because sometimes an intoxicated passenger in a car, when we get the report that this individual was a passenger and she had a blood alcohol, or he had a blood alcohol of 0.23, that can sometimes help to indicate alcohol as a possible factor in that collision when no other information on the report is pointed in that direction. And this is particularly true if everyone is dead in the crash. While we support Senate Bill 656, we would like to make a recommendation to you, and that is that there's a bill in the House, it's a larger bill dealing with the entire medical examiner's operations. It's House Bill 2279. And we would like to see the language of 656 amended to agree with House Bill 2279. What it does is require that the medical examiner forward as soon as possible a copy of each laboratory analysis made to the Motor Vehicles Division. This is what we're presently receiving, and actually enables us to get a little more information and use that information a little bit better than would it be the case if we only received a report on the number of persons who had certain readings and this sort of thing. So at any rate, what we would suggest is that you look at this bill in connection with 2279, and if possible, if the committee agrees, amend this bill to pick up the language from Section 4C in 2279 and Section 17 of that bill. Section 17 authorizes the medical examiner to order samples of blood or urine for laboratory analysis when a death requiring an investigation as a result of a motor vehicle accident occurs within 5 hours and involves anyone over 13 years old. The test would be to determine the presence of alcohol and, if considered necessary, the presence of narcotic or dangerous drugs. Of course, at the present time, tests on the ladders are, ladder conditions are almost impossible. We think that this would be very worthwhile if we had it in law, although we are getting very excellent cooperation from the medical examiner. That's what
I'll have Howard get 2279, and then we'll check it up. Now, is there anybody else want to testify? If not, then we'll end the hearing on. Now, don't close up your books, fellas. Don't get excited. Just sit still. We're going to a work session. When you look at 399.
Yes.
Now, this is the bill that we had down before. It's in the back. It was on the eminent domain. It was sent back up here. The go ahead, take it.
Do you want to?
You
have to. I can just go out.
Why don't you
ask it to go out?
It's in the.
Oh, I see.
It was sent back up here because
I
want to. The difficulties of. One we took down because of Ricky living there with a billboard bill. Now, the Attorney General met me in the hall the other day and said he was going to have some amendments to the bill. He thought. But he was working on it.
Oh, this is one of that old. The old guy that was retiring was testifying for what we sent him out in a blaze of glory. got him out of the water.
I would accept that we want to set up the book a little bit. I would accept the motion to table it. Then if the Attorney General comes over with the
The amendment will take it off the table.
Okay.
Okay.
So do.
So move. Okay, call the roll. Right. 451. Five bales of hay.
Senator Thorne
isn't here.
He told me
five bales of hay.
Five
bales of hay would be fine.
And a partridge in a pear tree, yeah?
I would entertain a motion to change the 20 bales to 5 bales. Hey, and that will take care of Ivor and get the time of 451.
I'll read it. What do you want to do? What do you want to do, Howard?
Oh, I'm going to change that to 5. I guess Senator Thorne agreed with Senator Carson on that.
Yeah.
They got together and decided that 5 would be the
minimum amount. 5 bales of hay.
5 bales of hay.
That's
ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's like 2,000 or so. Senator, I have a rule that Senator 451 be amended on page 2, line 5. The 20 be changed to 5. 20 billion is the first 5.
I know what I'd do if they caught me with
that.
I break the bales down if I end them, and I don't have the bales anymore. It's all loose hay.
Did I hear the eyes?
Aye.
Oh, Gordon. Senator Ivor moved that Senate Bill 451 be sent to the floor, you passed as amended, but Mike Thorne killed it.
Oh, that's better. I'm in favor of that.
Well, 4 years ago or 6 years ago was Christmas trees.
Remember?
Yeah. A lot of bales of hay with Christmas trees. Anybody run around with a bunch of
Christmas trees?
Aye. 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 Anybody's not going to use their penny
now,
for
why
a
why is 95?
Which number?
Why is 95? What does that do?
That's that license.
Oh, that's
October doesn't
that
have
was good
code license.
And
we got a little problem with that one.
Do we have a problem if we tabled it?
No,
I don't need table.
Would you rather table it? Doesn't make any difference. The only way you could, if you wanted it, you'd have
to. Well, our friend is laying flat on the back in the hospital with cruel old Simon Legree at the emergency table.
Well,
well
no, the Teamsters.
The Oregon Trucking Association doesn't like the approval of the chauffeur, and they are quite right because they've got a federal requirement that they're required to come in once a year with a report on the driving.
You want to accept the motion or want to wait, Mr. Chairman?
My business is no good.
You like the motion to table,
yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I didn't know whether you wanted to accept the motion or not, but
well,
it's bad. I mean, the bill, not the motion.
The bill's bad? Yeah. All right, I'll accept the motion to table the Senator TMU's Senate Bill 595 and table. Clerk Cornwall.
Aye.
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 Now, would we have anything else to do?
Not white.
We're taking a little survey. Would you have a half hour for my survey day?
What, again? Every time we've done this, we got shot out of the water. Either they changed the station time or something, I think. Yes.
How about this afternoon?
How about right now?
Okay, sounds good. I haven't got my... Oh, that darn... Oh, here she is.